This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shithead? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's your boy, the number one monk boy, standing 6 foot two, 299 pounds. You notice that number's going back up. It's been a depressing month here in Los Angeles. From the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island, it's Todd Gabris. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine, what are you doing here? Abortion is healthcare. Yeah, thank you. Topical. Also, are you out of breath because you ripped a bong right before you started the tune? Yeah, should I have waited a second? Yeah, you should have. Yeah, I know, Jackson, Maine. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studio is my newest silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout-out. Arthur, not currently in here, but should be joining us shortly. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, I've known this dude since he was 12, I think, when I met him. I have no idea. He's a young buck. Killing in the comedy community, it's Kyle Henderson.
Dude, that was fucking... People don't realize the musicality that has when done in front of them, I don't think.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, I it's like, if I take a month, I try to batch record, so I do like 3 or 4 in a week and then take a month off. And when I do the first one back, I'm like... Do I even know? And then the second, like, my eyes roll back in my head and it just, like, comes out of me.
You become
me,
the
like...
Undertaker. I'm stoked that Star is Born has been able to stick around in the intro for so long.
Bro, the amount of times... I just cut you into maybe something you could wrap your head around, something you understand about me. The amount of times I've said, like, okay... Just time to come up with some new shit for the intro. You do it. It's every week. You are a master improviser. Maybe just come up. And I'm like, for sure, we definitely have to. And then the second I sit down, I'm like, I didn't think of anything. Okay, let's just let it rip. And then, like, Jackson Maine has now been here, like, since a month after the movie came out. I need to
Which you could tell me came out a year ago or in 2016, and it feels like both.
Bro, my timeline is fucking broken. Honestly, and I thought this was just, you're a young gent. This is, I thought, was just being old man, but I can't tell when something happened, except if it was before I moved to LA, which is 11 years ago. Because, like, I could just be like, oh, that happened in New York. So that was over 11 years ago. And I'm constantly saying, like, yeah, I met her. It was in LA, so it must have been in the last 11 years. People are like, you don't know if it was, I don't know if it was 2 or 7 or 9. I have no fucking clue.
You're like a person who woke up from a coma. You're like, well, I met her, so it had to have been 12 years ago.
she should remember me. I've been following her on Instagram. Oh, she has no idea who I am. Oh, yeah, that has been a long time. Oh, I should unfollow.
Yeah, that's one of the funniest things about comedy is you'll be like, oh, that person's my friend, person I met for 4 hours. At a comedy festival right. 6 years ago, and we riffed about chili.
the amount of times I downgrade live in conversation to someone, I'd be like, oh yeah, my friend Kyle Anderson. A guy I know pretty well, and we kind of communicate. Well, you know, we're in the same colleague. Spiral of like, look, don't ask him if we're friends, okay? That's what it all comes down to.
Don't bring him up to me. Don't bring me up to him.
And also, stop bringing him up to me.
Yeah.
No, let's not ever bring up anything again, bro. Drop it all. How you been, man?
Dude, I've been really good. I've been working on some like film projects I'm trying to do, and
been hitting the fitness and getting it and diving into work and health. It is weirdly, everyone's like, yeah, man, just it's. Helps with your mental health. You're like, sure, dude. They start doing it. You're like, oh shit, okay,
dude.
Yeah.
That's what
everyone
really,
in my
it
life
truly
has been right.
Sucks. How much better you feel? Because when you're fat, you're like, nah. You're like eating cornbread at 3 a.m. You're like, this is pretty much the best is the feeling it gets for having a body. Yeah, rules.
I can't imagine something better than this. And someone's like, I ran a 5K this weekend. Fuck. I feel, yeah, dude. And. I'm now on, like, I've been a yo-yo guy my whole life on Run Hot and Cold. But for, like, about 4 or 5 months, maybe, like, 6+ months, I was really cooking with health and fitness. And I was truly feeling better mentally. I was like, this is crazy. This is awesome. Then I had some fucking personal shit I had to deal with. And
And that got a little difficult. And then my health stuff fell off due to, like, you know, mental and or just fit. And then next thing I know, it's like compounding interest. I'm feeling fucking. And just this week, I finally was like, fuck, I got to get back to start doing some of my healthy behaviors. I start doing it this week. I'm already feeling, and I'm like, oh, fuck. I can't believe you. It's instant how quick I forget. I'm like, no, food and drugs make me feel better. And then you do it for like a month. You're like, this is the worst I felt since I was 28 or whatever. Like, I gotta get my life together.
Yeah. Well, it's brutal because you start to realize, like, oh, fuck, man. If you do actually do it every day, you just feel better every day and it doesn't affect you. And when you stop trying to start again after stopping, feels so fucking hard. And so even if, like, I try to go and I like reckon with myself, I'm like, all right, we'll go, we'll do 30 minutes of cardio. It's better than I'll go and I'll do like a small lifting set. It's better
Just
than
just shrink it all down.
At least you get there. And then once you're there, you're like, I'll do 15 more minutes. Who cares?
Dude, that's the sauna for me. If I can't do anything else, I love the sauna so much. I'm like, just go to the gym and do the sauna. And then you get to the gym and you're like, I could fucking probably do a little dumbbell shit before I jump in the sauna or something like that. Like that. Yeah. That's the what gets me going. And bro, if I did 20 minutes on the elliptical every day of my life for my whole life, yes, there's probably stuff I could add to it or do better, but that would be so much more than I've done. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
And you're like, oh, I'm not going to go all the way to the gym for just a little workout. It's like, so you're choosing none instead. You're like, oh yeah, I guess I am. I'm swinging in the other direction.
Yeah. Well, it's like, the whole reason I got into this fitness journey was kind of, I haven't really talked about this with on a podcast or anything yet, but I went to Universal Studios and I got kicked off of the Harry Potter ride for being too big.
Bro, the one where your feet hang?
Yeah.
Me too.
Oh, Johnny G, baby!
last year during Hollywood Horror Nights, me and some friends went to go on that and...
It's brutal because it's like a time crunch. So when the guy's kicking you off, he's like, you gotta go, baby.
Because you're like wheeling away because the ride like barely stops. Dude, it was
horrifying.
Yeah. My wife's everyone like, I want to get off.
Whisked away into the. It's like, also, it sucks to be told you're too fat to be an adult Harry Potter fan. Like, that's brutal.
I know. And here's the thing. I don't even really like Harry Potter. I don't even really like. I like rides, but I was like, I'll go with everyone because we have the line front of line pass. Let's just hit it, and then like my wife's like, I'll get off too, and I'm like, no, now I don't want anyone. I don't want people sympathy.
That's the worst.
I'd rather drive home by myself right now than have someone else go. Oh, I'll sit within the fat corner with you. I want to talk about that ride for a little bit because I know you in person. I've seen you. We are fat guys, but it wasn't our fat that
it's
limited.
It's not our fat.
No.
It's our chest. It's our shoulders.
It's crazy because that ride is built like my gut fit, but the thing wouldn't go down over my shoulders and chest and like back. So I don't think there's enough elliptical and swimming in the world to get me to go on that ride. But I have had and that experience is fucking brutal. That is eye opening. Yeah.
I broke
two chairs on one day on a job where I was hosting a game show.
Like, oh my God.
That fucking humble.
That's so brutal.
I fucking broke my best friend Ben Rogers' couch at his house. I had to buy him a new couch. I sat on it and just broke the fucking like support beams in some cheap ass couch. That shit has got me so in my head that if like there's like a vintage chair of any kind, I like press down on it with my hand before I sit on it, man.
Dude, I used to have a bit about sizing up a chair, like you're gonna fight it if you're a fat guy before you sit in it, where you're like, you gotta fucking like, what are you trying to do, bro? What are you trying to? Because dude, I need
like a prescription chair, like more. Like...
Yeah, I need an extra strength chair. I need a chair that would last a normal person 36 hours. Good, dissolve in my system in 6. I was shooting this wedding one time in college, and I sat on this little ottoman, and it was like, it just disintegrated under me, like a fancy little ottoman, like meant for like rich people feet that are tiny.
Oh,
no,
man.
Awful.
Tiny, unworked feet. Yeah. Man, this is like wildly relatable. I mean, surprise, surprise. The two of us having a conversation.
I'll say you're weighing. We're at the same weight right now. Also, so it's literally I weigh myself to them at 299.
It's so fun, man. I was over 300 for so long.
It's nice to be right in that zone again. It's a big.
My buddy Ryan posited it as, yeah, you know what? Even if you're still struggling, struggling to stay under 300 is better than struggling to stay under 320. And I was like, you're 100% right. Because I had done that thing where I've talked about this before, but it's topical now that we're talking. I had done that thing where I'm like, yeah, I weigh 300 pounds. Yeah, I weigh 300 pounds. And like for a couple of years, I wasn't weighing myself. And my wife goes like, do you think you really weigh 300 pounds still? I'm like, well, yeah, I didn't lose any weight. She's like, no. I mean, like, you've been saying you're 300 pounds for a couple of years. You've clearly put on some weight. I got on the scale and it was 325. And I was like, okay, I think the scale needs to come back into my life a little bit. I need to get this under 300. And then it's been like a 2-year journey. Now I'm finally at 300 pounds, I ran fucking 2 half marathons. Like I think I'm supposed to be kind of heavy, but I also think that's a lie I tell myself every.
Well, yeah, I'm a Nordic. I'm part Nordic, I'm part Jewish, and so
like, hardy those people.
Hardy people. Anyone who has like a
built
heavy,
for survival,
a heavy sausage. My mom is Native American and Jewish. I'm like, she's gonna live to be 400 years old. Like you can
oppression presses you in from a coal into a diamond. That's two of the most oppressed people in the world.
I'm like injecting her with the insulin from Flower Moon. We just gotta slow her down.
This is just gonna slow her down, right?
We just gotta make my mom stop going to DC. That's all.
That's fuck. I mean, and I'm proud of you, man. I've been following you on social media. You know, you're fucking hitting the night swimming. And we'll get into our topic at hand, but this is, I think, important for listeners. You live a weird life, you know, timing, like not weird, but
totally.
not traditional timeline to most people, but you found something that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, like, and even you like we both like to swim. We're both swimmers. The fact that you found a pool that's open like all night that you can go swim in, like that's the shit that you kind of, as you get older, you realize you have to do. You're like, well, if I want to stick, like if you were like, I'm going to go to the 10:30 a.m. yoga class every week and you don't really like yoga and you don't really like waking up early, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Right. Dude, that's the thing. Okay. So like a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I was like, I want to fucking surf. I've wanted to surf my whole fucking life. I want to fucking surf. And my buddy's like, cool. You have to get up at like 5 a.m. and it's cold. And also I went to a surf shop and the guy was like, you're going to need like a 21-foot surfboard, buddy. Yeah. You're going
to take it from me. A surfer who is 299 pounds. Yeah. You need to use like a fucking kayak. Like
He tried to sell me like a wall of a building.
Yeah. It's like truly like stand up paddle boards. Like people are like those huge unwieldy things. It's like I can only stand up on like a 10-foot foam top BZ. Anything else, I think I'll fucking shatter.
And so like I went out and I fucking tried. I tried my fucking little ass off because I'm a swimmer. I was like, I can paddle out there. Dude, I fucking could not.
Different muscles.
Totally
dude. I'm
different
telling
muscles.
You, it's brutal. I'm a
totally
very good
different
swimmer,
skill set.
Very bad paddler.
And so I that was a thing for me. I think like trying to find like really something that works for you and works for your lifestyle. Like surfing was never going to work for my lifestyle. I was never going to get up at 5 a.m. and drive to the west side and like get in the water before 6 in the morning. Like that's not me at all.
No, that sounds fucking awful. And it's like when you take like, because you know, you get the advice from everybody when you do this, you got to do this, you should do this. And you're like, and it all sounds good or makes sense or works for other people. But all that matters is if you do it. Like, you know, I'm sure you have a few of these friends. I have a few like weird comedy friends who are older guys now who have like no background in fitness, but I'll like see them post on Instagram another 12-mile walking day. It's like, oh, they're just weird. Like, I'm a weirdo who likes to walk and listen to audiobooks. And so I get my fucking thousands of steps in and I'm like, it's whatever it fucking takes at this point. You know,
that's the other thing was I started being like, you know what? I'm just going to start walking and try to hit the fucking, you know, the arbitrary 10,000 steps a day. like, because it just sounds good. It feels like a good round number. You know what I mean? Like,
and it does feel good to walk, dude. Holy shit.
It does.
I like discover, you know, I lived in New York City for so long. So walking was like passive activity. I didn't realize I was doing it. And then after living here for like 8 years, the pandemic hit and my wife was working from home on Zoom meetings all day. And I was like, well, I need to get out of the house for a couple of hours. No public place feels safe. I will smoke this doob and walk for 3 hours. I would do this shit where I would just be like, all right, I have to mail this envelope. I'm going to walk to this post office in Beverly Hills.
like give yourself side quests.
I'd give myself errands that were huge side quests. I'd be like, oh, I got to pick up a prescription at CVS. Okay, that's 1.6 miles away. I'm not going to drive. And then I've also side thing, walking in LA, especially there's so many businesses that you drive by, like so many blocks you drive by or houses you drive by where you just, the details all blur together. Mm-hmm. And then when you're walking and you're at that speed, you're like, what is this store? A vacuum repair shop in the most expensive zip code in Los Angeles?
Yeah, yeah.
How is this in between two huge fucking Apple Store dispensaries? Is like a old Ukrainian woman fixing vacuums. It's like a dream.
This is a store. It just sells paint for Armenian figurines.
Yes, like, exactly. And I'm like, do they mean army figures? No, they mean Armenian. Like, fuck.
And it's somehow like taking like the old Din Tai Fung in like the gallery. Like it's got such a huge space.
right, dude. There's this store on Fairfax and Melrose it's a huge green building and it's something something hydroponics. Mm-hmm. I moved here 11 years ago. It has never been open. It's gotta be like $7 million worth of real estate. I have no fucking clue. At Fairfax and Melrose. Peak.
There's a little bar. It used to be like a Cabo Cantina or something, like right by the Comedy Store. It just got turned into like a Five Nights at Freddy's like pop-up thing. But it's right on Sunset. But it like for months, for probably like almost 2 years, it was just like totally shut down and like looked like it was in a ghost town, like full of garbage and stuff. And I'm like, how can this afford to not be a bar? Like, how could you afford this?
This is where it gets weird into like the producer's level territory with these like real estate, where it's like, actually, if we open a business, it starts like could start losing money. But as real estate, it just constantly adds value in Los Angeles because everything goes up in price. So they're so weirdly, wild. These assets are not depreciating at all, despite it being like an empty lot. And it's like, wait, so it's incentivized to not try to open something? Like, you know, it starts to get weird where it's And it's like, it's actually better if nothing opens there. It's like, well, not for the people who live in the neighborhood. Yes, for the landowner, but no one gives a fuck about that. Like, I live off of Melrose in the WeHo area, and there is, like, we have, like, 7 high-end rug stores that are the size of department stores. And it's like, what? God forbid one of these was, like, a cafe or, like, like an organic market or something. Like,
right, right. Or like, a co-op to help, like,
I'm being selfish. There's tiers below. There's all kinds of wants in these that are even more important. Yeah.
I used to work at this office for this, like, awful ad agency in Encino. And I would drive home and there were 3 competing chandelier stores on the same like block. And I'm like, you couldn't open a chandelier store anywhere other than this one block of Encino.
And there's got to be some shit like, well, you know, the chandelier district has been just in South Encino. And you're like, no, that doesn't seem like a thing that needs.
We can tap into the main line of Encino's power grid here.
We got all the power we need. You try to open one of these bad boys in like Northeast LA, you'll fucking drain it. You're like, okay, man, whatever. But something we talked about. Oh, first of all, the funny, like I talk about this on the pod all the time, but like going back and forth with the potential guests of like, oh, what are we going to talk about? You were like, we could talk about being heavy, lifeguarding. Like, it was just like seven things that I was like, yeah, these are like the core tenets of my personality. So yeah,
I only lifeguarded ever. You would love this because you were like a beach lifeguard, right?
Yeah, but I did.
You were a real lifeguard.
But I lifeguarded at the Hofstra Swim Center and pools and apartment pools too. Like I did it like all the time.
So. I lifeguarded at a pool that was 4 feet deep the entire pool.
Hell,
it was like the dumbest rec center pool ever built. It was the deepest was only 4 feet. So like when I tell people I was a lifeguard, I feel like it's like I have to be like, you know, when somebody's like, I'm a doctor, but they're like a dentist, you know, and you're like, all right, calm down.
Yeah, it's kind of true there. Yeah. But the topic that you threw out that I latched onto was because recently I had been talking about being a comedy nerd before being a comedian and how that affects your path or what that brings, how that brings your energy into it. And I think that's true for a large amount of people, but I don't know how many people would admit to being a comedy nerd. Cause it now, once you're a comedian, you're like, comedy nerds are fucking lame, dude. You're like,
yeah, it's kind of like wrestling or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Like, they're not supposed to be like big fans of wrestling, but they all kind of secretly were. You're like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's that vibe, and you run into people who are like pretty fucking good, or not, I was gonna say successful, but I'll remove successful, just say pretty fucking good comedians that I'm like, yeah, man, I was addicted to The Simpsons. They're like, I never could get into that. And you're like,
yeah, yeah.
What?
Or it's like some people that are like the quote unquote like cool guy comics that are just like get into comedy and just like skate on success like right. Very easily, and you're like, who are your favorite comics? And they're like looking at a name written on there and they're like Bill Hicks and George Carlin and Richard Pryor. It's like, wow, you really dove deep into the greats, huh?
Yeah. Those are like, if you ask a majority of like people,
Mitch
now,
Hedberg,
who their favorite
Bill
stand-ups
Hicks,
are,
yeah.
They'll get these names. You'll still get these names. It's so hard to like pierce through to non like comedy fans. I feel like, you know what I mean? Like the big, like, I mean, I guess you get like, my mom knows who Sebastian Maniscalco is. You know what I mean? Like, and like, that's like
my dad would know his face.
Right. I don't think my mom would know Dave Chappelle, which is, weird. He's arguably more famous than Maniscalco, but no one's gonna invite my mom to a Chappelle show. But everyone,
it would just be really funny if your mom was like, "I just don't know about these bathrooms."
Yeah, I agree with him too much to enjoy his comedy. Yeah. Like, oh no, mom. But of course, my Ginzo Italian American mother. Someone's like, you don't know who Sebastian Maniscalco? My brothers are big Sebastian heads, and they took my mom. And my mom is like constantly, and now one of my mom's favorite things, and she does this about everything, but recently on the phone, she's like, yeah, I'm actually going to the Borgata next weekend. I'm like, oh, what for? She's
the
like,
Borgata.
Well, the Borgata. I'm going to see, Sebastian Maniscalco. You know who that is? He's like the Italian stand-up comedian. I'm like, fuck you, Joanne. And it's like, also, your son is a comedian. Like, I know who some of the biggest
names Italian comedian.
Yeah, right. And the way my mom talks about him is like, finally found a comic I like. You know? Like,
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Hey.
This little indie guy you may not have heard of. He likes his own mutter pretty good. Yeah. Sebastian Maniscalco. I love when they mess the name up too. They're like, I'm a big fan of Sebastian Maniscalco.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that is like such parent shit. It's so funny. Today I was at the liquor store buying some supplies for the power hour, and this guy next to me, we're looking at the big rack of little mini bottles, and there's like an older man next to me, and I'm like, there's two huge like spinning trees. I'm like, what are you looking for? I'll keep an eye out over here and you do the same for me. He's like, I'm looking for Harry's cream liquor. And I was like, okay. And he's like, if they don't have that, I'll have to get Kahlua. I'm like, okay, I'll keep my eyes out. I'm like, I'm looking for Jägermeister. He's like, okay, great. We start looking through, and I'm like, what? I'm sorry. I'm an ex-alcoholic. What is the name of this liquor you're looking for? And he's like, it's like, I think he says it again. Maybe it's Henry's. He's like, Henry's liquor, cream liquor. I'm like, cream liquor? He's like, yeah, you like put it in coffee and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, do you mean Bailey's? He's like, Bailey's, yes. And I'm like, and I look and I'm like, Right. You are some guy's dad. You are somebody's uncle. You're coming home going, brought home the Henry's cream you said you liked, you know, like.
Yeah, he's just like that Harry's razor cream and his
coffee. Right, all melded together in one. Yeah. And I, when he was like, if they don't have Harry's, I'll take. And I was like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? But you just saying that reminded me of like just old people just like lean into like you correct them in the conversation multiple times.
Dude, my wife is Italian and her mom loves Mark Ruffalo, but will always call him Mark Ruffalino. And like just that's make probably, him a touch more Italian in her mind.
That's awesome. His agent probably made him change his name from Ruffalino to Ruffalo. Yeah, if not his agent, that's what happened at fucking Ellis Island. Yeah. He's repped by Ellis Island and Associates.
Yeah.
I mean, not for long. He's a little too pro-Palestinian to maintain his representation.
Yeah, yeah. There was such a good sketch I saw on Instagram that was it was like an actor calling his friends being like, which side are you leaning on? Because I'm not sure. Like, it's usually pretty cut and dry, but like this one could really go either way. And he's like,
indeed again.
And then he sees a post comes up that's like, your silence is deafening. And he's like, we're running out of fucking time. It's so good.
Fucking real. Look, if you're struggling with anxiety or depression, you're not alone. I mean, who can blame someone for going through that right now? Millions of Americans are searching for ways to feel better, but feel like they've exhausted every option and don't know where to turn. If that sounds like you, then guided ketamine therapy from MindBloom could be a game changer. MindBloom can help you feel better faster. MindBloom is the leader in ketamine therapy, having helped tens of thousands of people overcome their anxiety and depression. MindBloom's expert clinicians and guides can help you feel better in days, not weeks, and you can complete treatment entirely from the comfort of your home. In a study of over 1,000 MindBloom clients, 89% reported improvements in their anxiety and depression after only 4 sessions. Now, MindBloom has new programs that go beyond depression and anxiety to help you overcome challenges in everyday life. Right now, MindBloom is offering our listeners $100 off your first 6-session program when you sign up at mindbloom.com/mighty and use promo code MIGHTY. Break free from your anxiety and depression and feel better, faster with MindBloom. mindbloom.com/mighty and use promo code MIGHTY. Microdosing. I'm sure you've heard about it. All sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better. Microdosing all kinds of stuff. But our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, I know I know I have a big tolerance, but for me and for friends, the Microdose Gummies are amazing. They taste good and they feel good. I've been doing the nighttime ones, just grab a quick little handful before I brush my teeth, and it just really helps me. Like, I do all kinds of stuff to try to make myself sleep better, but the microdose gummies work. I take a couple an hour before I want to go to sleep and like right before I brush my teeth. I'm assuming you guys can take less, up to one is a microdose, you know, and it helps you wake up feeling not too groggy because it's easy to like overdo it with THC before sleep, you know, and then you're like, oh, I'm knocked out, but then you're groggy the whole morning and it's not great. So microdose gummies are making my sleep better, and I don't have all like the mental background noise or, you know, my back pain, all that stuff. So I highly recommend you get on the Lumi Labs microdose gummies. They're available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code MIGHTY to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. That's links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com, promo code MIGHTY. What? And you're a bit younger than me, so I love to hear like what were you nerding out on comedy wise? Like what got you into comedy? What forced your path into comedy fandom at least before?
So this is kind of interesting. Like, I think the biggest difference is that like I had the internet when my sense of humor was like first developing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so
I didn't have good internet till college.
Like, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it's like in college you could use the internet and find funny stuff. But like my sense of humor was being shaped by like weird internet.
Yeah. It was on path with the internet. So, which I think is cool because it opens you up to more shit than like what is playing on Fox, but it also and kind of kills monoculture in a good way, but yeah. it does feel like it, like I feel some sort of pride in having had to have watched I Dream of Jeannie for some
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
like, and I don't, and that's just me being old man Gabriel.
Well, and also I grew up poor, so we didn't have cable when I was growing up, so I weirdly was like my first comedy stuff was I was obsessed with like Jay Leno and Conan because they would do their monologues.
Yes. When you're young, like that time, like if you're not watching it a clip, if you're watching it at night, that's when you feel like you're like, I'm in grown up territory here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you feel a little more adult and you want to be a good, you want to laugh. You want to go
you
like,
you
want to
know why they're laughing. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, and like that's been like my journey my whole life from a little kid. I think that's why I got into like grown up shit when I was a kid, because I'd be like, "Oh, I think I understand this joke," and then I'd like bring that premise or energy.
Or the same thing with like a movie when your parents watch it and go like, "Wow, that's fucked up," and you're like, "Why was that?
Yeah,
messed up. I don't even."
Yeah, or your dad is like laughing at something, and you're like, "What is this?" He's like, "Oh, it's Bill Cosby's album," and you're like, "The guy from the Cosby Show?" I kind of think that's funny. He's like, "Oh no, this is not exactly the guy from the Cosby Show," and you're like, and like you get that like you feel like you're let into something, and arguably, the internet sort of manifests that in a way because you're self-discovering. You're right. Like almost everything feels like maybe you're not sure if you're supposed to.
Well, and you can take stuff to your group of friends and present it as this like I uncovered this, you know, you're all in the desert and you're like at a dig site. You're like uncovering and it's like Charlie the Unicorn, and you get to show your other 12-year-old friends like, look at this.
Oh, hey, man, I got salad fingers over here.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Exactly. Like, but Jay Leno, I remember I was obsessed with him like during the Monica Lewinsky years, because my parents would talk about how they would have their friends over. And I would have just watched the Jay Leno episode the night before, and I would have like memorized a bunch of the jokes. And so then I'm like this like 7-year-old, like this brassy 7-year-old, like my arm up on the table, like, you hear about this, Monica Lewinsky? You see this? Hear
making
about this
your mom
news?
Play like a bass on the floor?
Yeah.
Oh, Kyle.
I love my mom being a redheaded Jewish Kevin Newbanks. Miss Frizzle Newbanks.
That's really funny because like that's the same shit and then you hear tons of stories like that of like people like I recorded the audio of SNL and listened to it before listened to it in the morning and stuff. Like that shit is so real, and like there's something's got to latch you into it. And like for me it was, and I think I'm feeling this from you too, like feeling like comedy like is sort of like a fart would make your dad laugh. Like your dad might not like really, you can really engage with him about something, but a fart would make him laugh. Or like you could watch The Simpsons, using an example I brought up earlier. This is a little older for me, but watching The Simpsons and you laugh at something and he laughs at something you don't. And then you're like, what is that?
Do you remember your first big like family laugh? Like your first big, like a bit that from like when you were really young or something that actually hit?
Dude,
I have a good one. Yeah,
I do. And it might be a sort of forced memory because it is on camera. The day my dad got a video camera.
Oh,
it was
amazing.
Like 1993 or 1994, like a big beast of a camera. And my dad was a stagehand, a grip. So he was like aware, like he was on the forefront of getting a camera.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got like just like the first one that came out for like home use. And it was a beast or whatever. And it was Christmas. We also got these Yankee, and we're New York Italians. So we got these Yankees nightlights.
And hell yeah,
had,
dude.
And it was, we got him on Christmas Eve, and we had, that
Santa can know to leave a meatball by your bedside.
Hey, melt the mutts on top, baby. Toast the
Mike Falzone. Mike Calzone is almost what I call him. Mike Falzone has a really funny bit about being Italian with an X.
That's really funny. We and on video, it's my dad's like, so what'd you guys get for Christmas? And it's me and my little brother, who's like, we're 3 years different. So, and we got to be like 9 and 6, 8 and 5, something in there. And my little brother is, he's a principal, but he's very funny as well. And so is my other brother. Like, my whole family is very funny. And we're holding up these nightlights, and we're like, we got these nightlights from Pop Pop. And he's like, so what do you think about them? And then we like look at each other, and I just look back and go, they suck. Way too young. And like my dad laughs, and then like he of course he's like, he's like, come tell your mom about the night. Like, you know, it's like now we're getting paraded around, and like, and it's getting a good reaction everywhere. And I have literal goosebumps, maybe, you know, dead dad memories, but also memories of getting of killing joke wise.
Yeah. Like, killing and not knowing that it's a thing you could ever reproduce again is such a like goosebumpy feeling. And
holy
it's a
shit,
it's,
yeah,
it's a dragon that you chase forever.
Yeah, it's like, I wait, mean, I can make my own heroin. Like,
right, right. I remember my sister, my older sister was in like a youth law program. Like they were like helping you like maybe become a lawyer one day when you're in like high school or something. And it was like this big award ceremony. And there was this like important judge. He was like the big deal that he was there to like present this, you know, like accept this like lifetime achievement award or something. And so it's all these like lawyers and stuff at this like fancy gala. But this judge had this very like, he had this like Pixar character walk where he was just like really like throwing his hips around and like walking with like his pants super high up. And as a little kid, I just thought he had such like a cartoon. I would do this as a kid. I would like mimic how like different cartoons walked and stuff. Hell, you know what I mean? Like be like, I'm gonna walk around like Goofy or whatever. And so I started walking around. It was like a buffet style thing. So you could like get up and get food. And so I started like walking around like kind of behind him doing like the same motions, and I was like killing at these tables of like random lawyer adults. So like all very like serious adults were like noticing this kid making fun of this judge that they all, I learned now, like they all hated because he was like some hard ass judge.
At minimum, they all recognized how he walked too. Yeah. You know, like, even if they liked him, they were like, he does walk like that.
And so to see this little kid like roasting this guy with physical comedy was that murdering. And my sister was so mad at me. Like my sister was furious, but even I knew I was okay because my parents were laughing.
Yes, yes. That's
when
how you know
you have
safe,
that. When you have that approval, like in high school, I got in trouble. We had this, he like worked at the school, but he had gone to the school a couple years before. And his name, and I won't say his name, I guess, but he was like very cute. And he was like very cutesy. And we found out he was like, like trying to be like a male model. And he was like a real jerk to all of us students though. So like we all kind of like, when we found out he was a male model, we found his like Model Mayhem page.
yeah.
And as a joke, I had made like a t-shirt that said, all I want for Christmas is, you know, and then his name. And I had one of his like modeling like Christmas pictures on it. And I was like, should I make these and hand them out to the whole, like the whole senior class?
Oh,
and,
man.
And I got brought in and I got in so much trouble. And my parents were laughing though the whole time I was in. Like we were in the room with the principal and I was like, okay, I think I'm good because my parents think that this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is objectively funny. It's probably just rude, if not.
And, right.
At most, it's
at
considered
most, it's,
rude.
It's a rude thing a 17-year-old did.
Right. You right. Know? At best, it's like, this is an absolute waste of my fucking time. That's how we got like Saturday detention for fucking playing like blowing saltines all over each other at like at a lunch table. And I remember just weekend detention, and my dad was like, what the fuck did you get in trouble for? And it was like, yeah. And he's like, ah, and like he never even the rare time like your parents side with you over the school. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you see all these things now, like my son is actually this. It's like my parent, my teacher would be like, your son is fucking garbage. My parents were like, we told him that already. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm like, hey, fucking fight alongside me for a little bit. That would be nice.
Yeah, it was. I also remember, though, like my grandpa introduced me to a lot of older comedy stuff that I would have never found. So, my grandpa got me into, like, Charlie Chaplin, weirdly, when I was a little kid. So I was, like, six and, like, really into, like, Charlie Chaplin VHS collection sets.
That's funny because, like, when you, like, really buckle it down, it is, like, Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
you know
it's cartoony.
Like, yeah. So it's funny, like, because now I could imagine trying to put that on for, like, my nephews and then have, like, you know, my nephews who have, like, virtual reality Iron Man masks that, like, you know, and I'm like, hold on, no, you gotta, like, they couldn't even watch an episode of my TV show. Like, me being in it wasn't enough to hold them for like 20 minutes.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And it's like, that's your uncle. That's Uncle Nani. The guy who's sitting next to you is on the screen. That doesn't even fuck. Also, that's another thing I've noted. This is an aside, but I think seeing videos of yourself used to be very novel.
Right.
Like, it used to be like, holy shit, so-and-so's on TV. Like, you would be so excited when someone you knew was on the news.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
It
was such a big deal. And now because of video phones, it's like, you can always look at a video. And people would like bug out when like, wait, rewind that. That's me? That's what I look like? I remember mm-hmm. working a job really early on in the business, being in a writer's room with, as a matter of fact, I'll just name people. I was in a writer's room for like the Spike TV Video Game Awards in like 07 or 08. Kurt Metzger, pretty successful and now weirdly intense stand-up comic. I had shot a bunch of sketches being a UCB kid, but being stand-up, he hadn't like shot anything yet. He was on stage mm-hmm. every single night. But the second we filmed the sketch, he's like, whoa, hold on, go back. And then he's like, I guess I watched him like experience how it could be cinematic. And it like blew his mind. And I'm like, oh, this is so run of the mill for me because I've been doing like, we're shooting fucking stupid, dumb sketches and intro bits for improv wrestling or whatever.
Totally.
And I'm like, oh, fuck, that's why. And so now, when I see like my nephew, I'm like, look at this. It's a video of me. And he's like, yeah, I have a video of me on my, I have 2000 videos of me on my mom's phone. You're like, oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I tried to make so many like YouTube videos and stuff when I was like younger, when I was like, you know, 12 or so. Cause that was like when that whole thing was first starting.
I could only imagine. You know? I could only imagine if that shit was, I would have like, I would not be ever working again. I'd have changed name and right. be in like Europe because I'd put out the most, we had a public access show. We did a public access sketch show on Long Island called The Hammerheads. And then me and my friends did another one called Studio 53. Like we tried cool. to fuck it. We edited everything in camera, like where you'd be like, record and then say your line. I'd pop, stop and go, all right, now record, say your line. Okay, stop. Now mm-hmm. record, say. Mm-hmm. And we just did everything like that. And it was so fucking jarring. But if we had the fuck, like, do you have any of those YouTubes? Like, are they humbling? Or do you see like honor?
Oh, they're
like, you're
so they're so humbling. I mean, they're brutal. But there's occasionally like a small thing that in there that I'm like, oh, I don't hate that. That's not awful.
And you know could also mean? Be like, man, if a fucking 12-year-old kid brought this by me, I'd go, you actually, that is a little something. Okay, you're on like, stumbling on something.
You know, yeah. So making those sketches and stuff, like that was definitely something I was always trying to get like a sketch group together when I was a right. kid. Like I was always trying to get like four or five of my friends to like really want to make a web series or something. Like, cause I loved like Angry Video Game Nerd and those guys who were able to like make like internet videos, but a little more cinematic and a little more interesting. And that's eventually why I went to like film school and stuff. Cause I was like, I want to be able to make sketches not look like shit, like sound awful.
That's so funny. I wonder in the younger generations, how many people were inspired to like study film?
So many people in my film program were like had YouTube channels or like
right makes total
you
sense.
Know, did stuff. You know, it's like kind of the de facto YouTuber job is like I want to go to film school and direct. I get.
My freshman year of college was in the year 2000, and the teachers taught reel to reel editing in the production classes and. I learned Avid from a dude in my sketch group because we started making digital, not digital, but I had a, I got a Sony digital camera for Christmas, and we, I used that. You know, I'm Italian because like anything good I've ever had in my life, I got on Christmas. It's always like, that's why I have such good willpower for like treating myself, because everything
that's
is
so
like
relatable.
Gotta wait till Christmas. It's like always like, well, for, you can ask Santa for that. And my parents would be more generous than I could ever imagine every Christmas, but we had to hold out for it for some weird reason.
That's,
I think,
so funny.
I think like my dad's overtime at the fucking at Fox 5.
My thing was I could always convince, I could get my parents to figure it out. They could, maybe my grandparents and parents to go in together on it or something, if I could sell it as educational.
Yeah.
As having that edge that like I got them to buy me a camera by being like, I'm teaching myself photography, like it's edgy, you know what I mean?
Right,
like
those
the computer
are good
was
yeah,
for
yeah.
learning.
Right, right. That's so fucking smart. That's a savvy young kid right there. That is jumping back to I got into sketch comedy and then would eventually do live sketch comedy first before I even did videos, because that's just the technology timeline for me.
Wow. Yeah. But totally opposite. I was probably doing sketch comedy when I was 12, but playing all the characters or getting one of my friends to do it with me.
Right.
And,
right.
And I don't know if I've maybe done a sketch or two live, but I like live sketch is not something I've ever really done.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And so I got into sketch from you brought up Angry Video Game Nerd and that I want to for me, it was like SNL, obviously, but then like the state and Kids in the Hall, like those were like so paramount, like and they would just run those on well, the state, I was like, I'm old enough to have watched it on MTV, but like there was a period of time, and this was when I was a little older and like in high school, but this was like my master's course in comedy. Comedy Central was air either the truncated SNLs, Conan, Kids in the Hall, or some new original they were launching, and then like eventually went to movies. But fucking watching old Conans all the time was like so good for me, like emotionally, like that shit was so inspiring and so funny. And I think there's probably like people around people my age, like hundreds of us who like watched The Simpsons as kids, got into comedy, and then landed at this like when Comedy Central was also like fully like, before they were into like fully original content, they were just,
well, and then you get older and you start to piece things together and you're like, oh, okay. So three of my favorite episodes of The Simpsons were also written by Conan or like his little group of friends, like
when
guys.
When I found out, dude, what you're describing now,
like
this must have been like when Martin Luther came up with like the 95 theses. Cause when I was so into Conan, when I found out I didn't even care what episodes, when I found out he used to work at The Simpsons, that blew my fucking mind. I'm like, but these are two of the funniest things I've ever been part of. I'm like, he's the common denominator. You know,
I
know I have a little bit more about how the industry works. But at the time I was like, this guy's a fucking god. He's had two of the best shows I've ever watched in my 18 years on this earth.
Have you seen that? There's like a Conan Simpsons, like roundtable, like writer's roundtable.
No.
Okay, you have to look this up. You'd love this. So it's Conan and a bunch of the like season one through probably five like Simpsons writers, like the OGs.
Oh, shit.
And what's amazing is they treat Conan like he's like an open micer still. Like,
right,
he's like the baby
writer. Because that dynamic weirdly doesn't change as someone who's now been doing comedy around some of the same people for 20 years.
Exactly.
Like I'm always just like, yeah, that guy fucking drives me crazy. And then I'm like, actually, to be fair, I think I'm judging him on his 23-year-old self, and he is a father of four now. He might have a different vibe. Oh,
it's a funny video because they talk about how like they thought his name sounded so dumb on his like writing sample.
They were like,
we called him to make fun of his name. Like we didn't even call him to offer him a job. We called him to be like, so what are you, like an Irish like barbarian? Yeah.
That's fucking, oh man, I got to check that out. Link me that shit after, dog.
Yeah, I will. But no, like, I think like, so I remember my grandpa.
Just real quick before you get grandpa, what tweaks it from, because what we're describing is like, what tweaks it from fandom to nerddom? You know what I mean? There's like, there is some sort of, what is that metric that we're measuring there? Because like, you start to think, like, I think thinking about it like Conan wrote for The Simpsons and that show. Oh, and like putting and like going deeper and saying like, why do I think this is funny? Why did I like this? How would this repeat? Like,
well, and that's why podcasts, I think, are cool for people to nerd out into, because you can see like and pick up on dynamics to be like, oh, these guys from this show and these guys from this show are actually, they're friends.
Right.
They have been for many years. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that's so cool. You know, like, and you can sort of like nerd out in the, almost like how you nerd out in like how all the Marvel heroes connect.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, of like, yeah. Oh, this guy's in this dude's run for four issues. So I can go listen to him talk about why Iron Giant is great.
Yeah. You know? Oh, these two guys that did comedy together for like 10 years have two separate podcasts, but I like both of them. So I bet you I would have liked the comedy they were, you know, like,
yeah,
all
exactly.
That shit. Yeah. Yeah. That's
no,
fun.
Like, so I remember like, so with my grandpa, it's funny you mentioned The State. I'm obsessed with like mockumentary. Like, it's like my favorite, like, I love Documentary Now. I, you know, obsessed with all that stuff.
Documentary Now is so, I love parodies.
That episode they did, I don't know if you saw it, with the Dushkur Mountains, where it's
I haven't watched, is that the newest season?
It's a newer season. You have to watch. It's a two-part one. It's they're doing, what's his name?
Free Solo?
He talks like. This it is
Werner
heartbreak.
Herzog.
Yeah, Werner Herzog. They're doing a Werner Herzog where he's it's like a parody of that, where he's this director who is shooting like an intense documentary about like the trials of the Dushkur people who live in the harshest of all basins in the world, and he's also filming a sitcom pilot, The Bachelor Nanny, for CBS, like simultaneously. And it is the funniest fucking thing.
Oh, that's
thing.
Awesome.
It's
I
so good.
I love they do such that. I mean, they're such
they
funny people.
They go in so deep.
But
like,
it,
visually.
They also, yes. They like, I love, because parody is what first taught me to understand comedy. Like, even like trying to learn like the UCB idea of game when I was in my 20s. The one that locked it in for me was when I took like a movie improv class. And it's like, you just like, oh, I get why this is funny in Hot Shots, because they're matching this thing that you're like, oh, that would be funny if like, imagine in Top Gun, if they did this instead, you're like, oh,
right.
And then you get to see it in the movie. You're like, oh, I see now. Like, yeah. And that's, the Dushkur Mountain. Sorry, I'm on a full sidetrack. Go back, jump back.
No,
to
I think like that's one of the things that makes me so excited about that style too, is like the filmmaker side of me loves like how they pay attention to the filmmaking of all these different documentaries, you know, whether they're doing that documentary about the octopus, you know,
teacher.
Yeah, they did a parody of that one and they filmed it like just like it. It was like really, you know, they always crush it.
They make the Grey Gardens one look like Grey Gardens.
Oh, the Grey Gardens one is so good. When it cuts to Fred Armisen, he just has a bowl with ice cubes in the bed. That shit, dog. Because film school, they made us watch Grey Gardens. You know what I mean? Like,
course.
In documentary class, they made you watch Grey Gardens. So it's like, when that stuff comes full circle. But I remember, like, specifically when I was a kid, going with my parents went out of town. And I was, they took my grandma. And so I was just with my grandpa. And we went and saw, and he's an older, you know, Jewish man, New York, born and raised Brooklyn. And we went and saw Borat.
Oh, whoa.
And he was dying. I mean, my grandpa had a hilarious sense of humor. I mean, he would prank people, like elaborate, like he renewed his vows with my grandma, like in the Bahamas, like 50 years of being married. They ask her, like, do you take him to, you know, continue to be your lawfully wed husband? I do. And it's, you know, they have people playing violins, the whole thing. And they get to him and they're like, do you still take Ruth to continue to be here? And he goes, and they're like, sir? And he's like, I'm thinking.
Fuck,
this is like classic
shtick. That's great grandpa work. Just classic grandpa right there.
He went to UCB for grandpa work.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm teaching level 2 grandpa. I mean, that's half of what UCB is teaching now anyway.
Now, listen, I'm doing private grandpa work. It's $800 a class.
Look, we're outside the school system. I rented a silver studio in Silver Lake. We'll be fucking Gucci.
But we went and saw Borat. I just remember him like dying laughing, and that movie being so like formative, because it felt like something that like maybe my parents wouldn't even be okay with me watching.
Right, right.
But I got an adult to like let me into this adult thing.
Yeah, mom would let me you used to be able to do that shit with like my grandma and grandpa would babysit us a lot, and my grandma would be like, "You're allowed to have candy before dinner." Be like, "Yeah, sometimes, you know, like or yeah, yeah." Or my pop-op, the widowed Italian grandpa, he couldn't give a fuck. Like he just was like, "I have to just be here." Like he's like, "Whatever makes you guys happy." He would just take us to Nathan's and peel off like $5 each and just like sit like this at the arcade while like, we ran around. Like he would just do these things. In hindsight, that is just like, yeah. And then we would be like, Pop-Pop gave us $5. That's 20 quarters. Like, we couldn't wrap our fucking heads around how much money that was.
Oh, but I also remember
Borat with Pop-Pop.
Borat was huge. And then definitely in that same vein, I remember flipping through the channels one day, probably with my grandpa, I think. And we got to, you mentioned the state, we got to Reno 911. And without knowing what it was at all, thinking it was just Cops. Right, which is the most magical you could ever find that show.
Right.
Yeah. And it's the episode, it's like the bit where they just like rescued this cat off of this roof. And it's like the cops talking to all these kids about how good the police actually are. Like there's no reason to be afraid of the police. They actually help you. And, you know, he's got like this cat. The other one's got this cat and he's on the roof and he's like, "Don't worry, I saved it." And he holds it up and then it slips and he drops it. And there's an AC unit under, like right there. And it goes right in the AC unit and then just red splatter on the house. And it's like such a like quick bit and then right to credits. And I was like,
and you think you're watching
what
Cops,
is this?
Right?
Yeah. I'm like, what is this?
And that's the power of parody, right? Like there's mm-hmm. like an element in there of making such a good parody of Cops and having that base of knowledge. You're like, there are things you expect. So when it defies expectation, it hits in a certain way. It's like, oh man, that one. Talk about discoveries. Fifth grade, maybe it is. Fifth grade. I'm hearing about a show called Beavis and Butthead, and it's apparently it's animated, and this and kids at school's parents won't let them watch it, but it's funny. They hit a frog with a baseball bat, and you're like, what? And it's like, and then there's like weird music, and you're like hearing all these secondhand stories, like I have to watch this show, Beavis and Butthead. And then there was this summer that we were living with my grandpa due to some housing issues, you know, similar, mm-hmm. raised mm-hmm. poor. Now mm-hmm. my poor widowed pop-up has a family of five and a dog moving in with him. So we fucking move in there and it's the summer. I know that this show is on MTV. That's all I know about Beavis and Butthead. So we have one TV on in the basement that has cable on MTV. And we run down every 30 minutes that we're awake to see, like, anytime it's like, yeah, it's like at 5, at 5:30, at 6, at 6:30. Or if it was like, seemed like it's music videos. Yeah, probably music videos.
Because there's no way of knowing.
There was no way to know. And then one time I ran downstairs and I'm like, my brother, I'm not going to say his name. My brother, get down here, down here. And he comes sprinting down the
stairs. It's actually really funny that you're like, my brother.
My brother, you must
come,
see
brother,
this.
You must yeah. see.
It's like Robin
feast
of Locksley.
Your eyes upon the Beavis, brother.
And we sat down to watch it. And like you're talking about the cat dropping into that fan is such a specific visual. This visual was they had to like paint. I might even not be remembering it right. They had to paint. They got ice cream and paint and somehow confused the two. And like, we're eating ice cream, eating paint out of ice cream cones and then trying to paint their walls with ice cream. And me and my brother could not wrap our heads around what was going on. And there was a lot of that, like, shut up, Beavis, you know? And we were like, just felt like we landed in like a magical fucking world where we're yeah. like, what
is. Well, because Beavis and Butthead was like, felt like something you'd never seen animated before.
No, yeah, exactly. It didn't look good. Like, right. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, everything right. always looks good. This doesn't even look that good. That's funny. And then it's like, then it cuts to like a music video about a song, like for a song called Detachable Penis. And you're like, what the fuck? And yeah. you're like 11 or 12. And you're like, this fucking rules.
Well, and that's one of those things too, of like Beavis and Butthead for me, when I was younger, felt like an older kid show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And being able to get your hands on like older kids stuff always felt like so special.
Oh, yeah. We had luck. We luckily, or luckily is funny, we were major latchkey kids because like both of my parents just worked and had jobs where you had to work weekends and not 9 to 5s. So my parents were, they gave over TV rules like immediately because they were like, this is the only thing that's going to keep these fucking kids alive is me. So they would like, we had cable and we always got the new video game system and like, and in hindsight, it was just like buying babysitters, right? Mm-hmm, like I would be like, come home from school and you can watch TV until I get home at 5. You know, you're like, hey, get off the bus at 3. You're 10 and watch your 7-year-old brother until I get home from work. You're like, okay, but we can just watch whatever we want. So I never had that, but there would be, I would not get some stuff and it would kill me. And that's something that I still hold dear in my heart. Like I have issues. I have to like stop going on social media because I'll go on Twitter and I'll be like, shit, I don't know what this is in reference to. And I'm like, and I have to
You're scrolling down 8 tweets trying to get context.
Yeah.
And then you get context and you find out it's like, oh, a streamer was rude to another streamer 4 years
ago. Exactly. Exactly. And then I'm like, wait, streaming what? And then like my brain just is broken that I like have to know everything. And that when I was a kid, it felt like I was like, there's this world of knowledge I don't understand. Like I could tell that that's supposed to be a joke, but why? Why don't I think it's funny? What don't I have that I'm missing here? And sometimes it would just be like, oh, that's not funny. Or sometimes it'd be like, yeah, you don't have a lot of context for like if someone's making riffs on like Bruce Springsteen in the Bible, you have zero context for like either of those. And I'm like, the more I know, the more I can enjoy comedy. And then that set my spectrum brain down this like lifelong quest to learn everything.
Totally. Well, and also you feel like, you know, the more jokes you understand, the more you could lean over to someone and be like, you know, actually, this is funny. You know what I mean? Like,
bro, once you can talk about understanding jokes, memorizing jokes or memorizing Simpsons lines or movie lines, that was like
dialogue. As a
kid. Yeah. That was like, I was in the Simpsons fan club in 7th grade, which was like another kid just made a 250 question quiz about the Simpsons. People would just, and because I have like that stupid spectrum brain where I would be standing there and they'd be like, sorry, not stupid spectrum brain, that my brain works in such a specific way. Like I'm on the spectrum. I memorize things and then like whole important things cannot stick. But I'll be sitting there and I'll be like rattling off the lines from Hook and my friends will be like fucking cackling, or I'll be like Purple Monkey Dishwasher. Like I'm just rattling off Simpsons references and my friends just roll and I'm like, man, this is crazy, but I feel like bad that I'm like cheating by making my friends laugh with the Simpsons. I'm like, wait, I got to come up with my own. And like, that's when you learn that. Well, that's when you learn like creating your own comedy.
YouTube video or something too. Like those as kids were so quotable and like you just replay the video and your friends all quote them to each other at school. And like,
and you can get immediate context too, which, you know, was kind of lost on. In my generation.
But that was kind of one of the things I always like, and I would do sometimes, and you would probably do this too, of like, if I didn't understand a Simpsons joke, I would almost like invent context in my head to be like, this is probably what that means. Like, I don't know who that guy, I don't know really who this guy is that they're referencing right now, but I'm imagining that he's some kind of mean musician or something. I don't know.
Dude, that's funny. Simpsons was like was a co-viewing show. My dad would watch that with us if he was home from work. And so that for me, he was like I'm like, what's Bart's costume? He's like, that's from a movie called Clockwork Orange. I'm like, is that funny? And he's like, no, what's funny is that a kid is dressed as that. I'm like, why? He's like, the movie's really, really intense. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, Clockwork Orange, Clockwork Orange. You have to see Clockwork Orange. You have to see Clockwork Orange. Like, and it's like that burned in my head. I will see that movie someday. And then like later on, you're like, wait, why is that funny? And he's like, I think that's just a weird word. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of great. It's kind of great when your dad doesn't know either.
Yeah.
And you'll ask, and he'll be like, I don't know, it's something political or something. I have no idea. Right. My dad is like delightfully normal, like normie core. Like my dad will call me about like a new like, he'll call me about what happened in the act three of a Young Sheldon episode.
That's so awesome.
He rules. And that's why, like, I know I could take an idea to him, and I'm like, okay, if it can make my, like, comedy nerd friends laugh, and it can make my dad laugh, then, like, it's a pretty crossover idea. But I could tell when my dad, when something's too weird for my dad comedy-wise, he'll just go, that was different. Yeah. Like, I thought my dad would really like Bullet Train, just because he really likes John Wick and stuff, and I thought he'd dig Bullet Train, and we saw Bullet Train, and we were leaving the theater, he just goes, yeah, just nobody died normal in that movie, huh?
It did kind of suck. It was kind of like Bullet Train did kind of suck a little. I'm with your dad.
It was colorful.
Yeah, it was very colorful.
I like the water bottle part.
I did too. The extended like Aquafina commercial.
Yeah, yeah. Commercial extended.
And then yeah. there's also a weird Audi commercial at the end. Like, hey, nice car. And then like a telephone pole falls on it and doesn't break it at all. Yeah, they're whoa.
Brad Pitt like pulls off and then it just turns into an Audi ad.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I love a fucking normie dad. That's
yeah.
When did you make the jump from wanting to be being a nerd for it and then wanting to do it specifically? I'll kick it off real quick.
Yeah,
I never thought it was like it was never like considered as a choice when I was young. If I had seen young kids being funny on YouTube, I would have fucking 100% leaned in. But I just didn't seem like something that was, and my parents were never like, hey, you're a 17-year-old kid who goes to Blockbuster and rents, you know, like you could work in film. And my parents are always like, you want to be a lawyer, a cop, or a doctor, or a fireman? You know, like yeah, we can only have Lego jobs in this family. And so I fucking like, I never thought about it until I went to school as a biology major. And then my freshman year, someone was like, I was just like being funny at like the activities board. And someone's like, put an eye. I signed up for like, I'm interested in theater. Here's my, you know, John. Dude,
by the way, imagine you being like a marine biologist and like cracking tall boys on the boat. Like,
first of all,
like, what were you thinking, though? I'm the same way, though. My initial major was fire science. I was like, I'm going to be like a firefighter, but like an investigator.
Yeah. Also, take it from me. You're going to hit a certain age where twice a day you go like, how much better of my life could have been?
Oh, dude, every month and a half, my mom's like, you're big and strong. You should have been a chiropractor.
And dude,
and she's probably right.
At some point when you're like 56 and renting and don't have a dishwasher, you're going to be like, if I was a chiropractor, I'd be retired with a house in fucking Maui.
Yeah, right now. Yeah. Yeah. I could live in any city where a house isn't $3 million.
A person, I was like, oh, yeah, theater, that sounds fun. I'll sign up. I was just like putting my name on all these lists. And they were like, put a H next to your name. I'm like, why? And they're like, well, we have like a comedy group here at school. And, you know, it seems like you might. I was like, oh, sure. Yeah. Corny. Then I like auditioned for it. Got it. And then over the course of that semester, I switched my major to like film production. I was like, I am. And my dad was an IATSE fucking stagehand. He's like, look, if you ever want to work in television, don't go to college. I can get you a job. Right. You can be making 80 grand in like 3 years. And I was nah, dad, not for me. Biology major. Going to join the FBI. That was my plan. I was going to be a scientist.
A Lego job, though.
Yeah, again.
So you were
I was like, I'm going to be, and he's like, good. All right, great. And I'm like, yeah, no stagehand shit for me. And then like, you know, 4 years later, I'm graduating college, $100,000 in debt, and I'm making $110 a day as a PA at VH1. I'm like,
yeah, yeah.
I chose poorly.
Dude, that is like, okay, so going back to like the things that made me realize I could do it was I had only ever seen stand-up done like on The Tonight Show or in specials or, you know what I mean, stuff like that. The thing that really made me feel like I could do it. One of my friends started doing stand up when I was about 17. He was probably like 20. And, but the thing that made me realize that like, maybe I could do this. And it's funny, 'cause you were actually a part of it. College Humor used to do these like black box shows.
Yeah, I think at maybe UCB. They're
at UCB New York, I believe.
CH Live, yeah.
Yeah, CH Live. Those CH Lives like changed my CH life, bro.
That's awesome. Yeah.
They were so like formative to me to be like, oh shit, stand up can be done at like at this scale where right. like I could see doing this. And these guys are funny. We're funnier than like the people I've seen with specials. Right. Like I've never heard
this,
of any.
I like
of them.
This more like, than Belzer, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
I'm and a so, kid. Like, this is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And discovering that through, you know, like I found College Humor sketches first and then like deep on their website, the CH Live stuff was on there. And then I just like, I would like devour those as soon as they were posted. I discovered so many like people through like I think that was the first time I saw like Pete Holmes, probably. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
Mulaney, maybe. Like he was.
Yeah. DC Pearson was like,
hell yeah.
I discovered like Derek Comedy through that. You know what I mean?
That's
which is
so
very
funny.
Backwards from yeah. how a lot of people found Derek Comedy. But
that is cool though.
Like, so those were such a formative thing. And then being able to show my friends like this funny DC Pearson, like Haagen-Dazs bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And have that be referenced in our friend group more than Dane Cook's jokes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
and I keep coming back to this, the idea that you can get your friends up to speed with what you're into doesn't happen for me until college. Like, and even in college, it's still like, look at my computer. Look at this funny thing I found mm-hmm. on Ebaum's World.
Totally.
It's still, we're still not like messaging them to each other or emailing them to each other yet or anything like that. But when we were young, it would be like, someone would be doing it and it would be like, I hope in like the next 2 years, I finally rent Police Academy 3. You know what I mean? Like, and now, but by the time in college, one of the biggest like viral things that broke my brain, I found them senior year of college, were those Fensler films, like G.I. Joe, those
yeah,
like re-edits,
redubs
of the G.I. Joe PSAs. I was at like a bachelor party with a bunch of foreigners and some people older than me. And I'm like, have you guys ever watched it? And they were like, what are you talking? I'm like, can't believe I'm 41. I'm here with people ranges 35 to 50. I'm going to play videos on YouTube. And we sat transfixed. We watched like, there was a YouTube supercut of them. We watched it for like 28 minutes. Which is like, dude, 40 sketches.
Yeah. Which is also 6 hours of getting random people's attention for a YouTube video.
Yes.
You know what
yes,
I mean? Like
yes,
that means it was crushing.
Yeah,
like,
right. Exactly. Yeah. And with the graded on the curve. Yeah.
Is there any better feeling than showing somebody a YouTube video and then being genuinely so fucking into it?
Dude, it feels,
rules.
It feels so fucking good, man. Like, it's so fun. It's just below doing something that someone really likes. You
yeah,
know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I love nothing more than to give a recommendation to someone and for them to, like, really love it. That feels so good. I'm like, oh, see, that movie meant a lot to me, too. I'm glad it enriched your life or whatever. And, like, doing that for someone, someone's like, oh, I listen to your podcast when I'm down. It feels great. You're like, oh, that feels so good. But just every once in a while, just throwing something on and being like, look at this guy get hit in the nuts. This made me laugh. Someone watches it and laughs. You're like, yeah, we're all fucking best friends, right? Like, life
yeah.
is fun. And like,
yeah.
it instantly joins you in like a way. And it's a weird, laughing together at something is super powerful.
It's super powerful.
And it feels very good when it's
well,
you.
Well, that love and hate is what can drop. I have a theory that like one of the quickest bonds you can make with a human being is either like a bit that you are doing, like a quick riff that you're both on the same page on,
yeah,
or at the same power is learning that you and a coworker hate the same boss.
Ah,
those are two of the
hatred,
strongest.
Mutual hatred
yeah.
is great, and especially in that in a power dynamic way where it's not mean that you're like, yeah, we both hate the male guy. Like that's
right,
like,
right.
yeah, it doesn't have to be me, but nothing is better than finding out like someone who you think is like super sweet and corny hates the same person.
Ooh,
as
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I always say, like
Stephanie from HR has a dark side.
Yes, yes. You're like, oh, I thought we would never get along. Now you and I are gonna be friends forever.
It rules. Learning that you could talk shit about a certain person with somebody is so healing.
That's an instant fucking bond. That's an totally. Instant fucking bond. Also, being stuck waiting in the same place is a weird bond where it's like, yeah, I don't know where the fucking guy is either. Like all of a sudden it's like totally. Just being like bone, like, yeah. Like just today, cops were arresting someone or investigating someone in the building next to me, and two cop cars had blocked our driveway, but they were unmarked cop cars. So they were just too and I'm like, what the fuck? And like, and then another neighbor of mine pulls up. And then this is especially true in like in neighborhoods, especially neighborhoods with apartments, because we're more likely to be talking to people. All of a sudden, there's like seven people in the street going, these fucking cops will park wherever they like. All of a sudden, we're all people who aren't even being currently affected by it. We're all like, are we bitching about something that is like a higher power than us? So it's okay to jump. And are we all getting together to punch up? Let's go. And
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
People coming out of their house going, they're crazy.
Suddenly, then, everybody's a cab and real hard. Yeah, it rules. And they love
shit like that. They're like, you know, the police. They one time shut our lights off, and then they
oh,
come
dude,
back
everyone
and,
starts having a little story.
Yeah, and it's
that
like
rules.
Yeah, and it's like or like with neighborhood drama, it's like this specific apartment. You know, in January they had some issues with the police, and you're like, no, I didn't know, old lady neighbor that I avoid because your dog scares me. Tell dude, me more.
Dude, my neighborhood drama is so heated right now. And it's just, I lived in my building in North Hollywood had like 200 units and almost no drama. And this building has 4 units and so much drama.
Dude.
Because everyone knows each other.
Exactly. When you get to 200 units, you can like blend into anonymity.
Dude.
Wow, I can't say that word too high.
I would be my old building. I would just be in the elevator with like Chechenian dudes with ankle monitors. Like that's who was in there. Yeah. You know, it was all like safe houses. Like everybody was like laying low. Everybody did a heist like 2 weeks ago.
Shrink that number a little bit, especially in LA. People be nosy here. I mean, probably because like 75% of people came here to work in entertainment and and still do in some or trickle down to something else, but still have that energy. A lot of ex-theater kids living here. And you fucking get down below, you said 200 units. You get down to like, we have like 10 units and the building across from us has 12 units and we share a driveway. We are all in each other's business. Everybody yeah. knows everything about everyone. And like I am like a boundaries guy, even though I'm like a fucking open book and I'll talk to anybody.
Yeah, but your house is different. Your living
exactly.
space is
I want to be able to get if I want to leave like and my wife and I fight about this all the time. I'm like, if I want to leave my house and get in my car, I don't want to like you're like, shit, I can't go outside right now. I don't want to get stuck talking to so and so. And I'm like, see? I never crossed that. And it's like, I feel really bad. So-and-so broke up with his girlfriend. I'm like, I don't know who he is, no less who his girlfriend is.
Yeah.
I'm gone.
You mustn't get invested in
exactly.
any of this.
Exactly.
You have
exactly.
to John Draper through this part.
Right. Like... Wait, so you're in a 4-unit building now?
So we have this one lady next door. She's all the drama comes from her. And
usually
she's like uber religious, like to the point where like you can hear her like doing like tongues in her house, like yes. in her unit, or like blaring like Christian music at like 7 a.m. And her son, I think, produces Christian music like in her apartment sometimes. It's a nightmare. And so one time she has an above the top floor unit. And so the people below her who are my friends, they were you know, they were fucking as you do, making the sweet love making, and she
producing a non-Christian
that...
album is what we call that.
Very good, very good, John. And so she, I guess they had each other's number, so she texts them and is like, "Hey, could you keep it down? Could you keep down your non-Christian?" album. And this escalated because they were basically like, no, that's like a huge invasion of our privacy for
yeah,
you.
You're not
like
that. That's
do this. That's kind of part of apartment living is you got to do. You're going to hear people fuck.
Brief aside. I talked about this recently. We all know for the ground floor apartment people in these, you can see into our apartment, but do not, you do not, we pretend you can't. Mm-hmm. You do not say mm-hmm. ever talk through the window to me.
No.
Because no, because you do not see me.
This
isn't
a Wendy's drive-thru.
Yeah. I have to believe, we have to keep up the suspension of disbelief that you cannot see me for when I want to just, I need to get a fucking baby wipe while I'm fully naked or whatever. Okay. Like and apartment people, like, that's the apartment rules. If you hear someone fucking super loud for like a month in a row and you cannot sleep, you fucking can casually say, if you cannot say anything. Also, hearing your neighbors fuck rules. It's like the positive of living in a apartment. You cannot do it. There's easy ways to like put on your own Christian music and don't hear shit.
And this couple is like a hot bro couple. Like it rule. Like they kick ass. Like they rule.
Even better. It's ugly people fucking sounds beautiful as well, but hot people fucking helps with the imagination.
Yeah, totally. It got to the point where she went to their bedroom window.
Oh,
because they have their bedroom window is like in an alley that we could like is communal.
Super Christian lady going to the gay couple who's fucking's window. We're getting into fucking like Alabama territory here. Like so, this shit get
and
not LA.
And she spray paints a cross under Whoa. Their window on the building.
Oh. No,
and so
you.
Now one of them has painted on a big canvas. It's just like the devil giving middle fingers, and it says "fuck you," and they like hung that in the window.
That's awesome.
Which that's kicks fucking, so much ass, dude.
That fucking rules.
That
man.
Neighbor also has a welcome mat that says "come back with a warrant," and I'm like, hell yeah.
Yes, dude. Yeah, I think you're building rules, man. That's awesome.
Kicks ass.
All right, before we get out of here, one last parting question. Do you maintain your bona fides as a comedy nerd now? I find trouble with that because I'm still a big consumer of comedy, and it makes me fans of a lot of stuff. And I always get mad at my friends who are like, I don't watch any comedy shows. I'm like, what? You're a comedy writer. You write comedy shows. It's like, yeah, but I don't have it in me. But I do feel like I'm like, I can't, I'm watching too much of this. I should be doing, I'm consuming too much content. I should be making some in some capacity. Where do you fall on that going forward?
I don't really watch stand-up anymore. And
that
I try not to watch stand-up. Mostly because I don't want to lift things. I don't want to like.
Yeah, you don't want some idea to be like buried in your head and be like,
yeah,
oh shit, is that from blank? Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like, and so I think like, but I do watch a lot of like shows still because I think that's like really important. And I watch a lot of video essays on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
Like, which is like,
but that's also kind of a, like, and we'll talk about this in plugs more, but that's kind of a medium you do as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's and what I like about it is it's
I was gonna
usually
say, the last
lets...
video essays I've watched were yours, Kyle.
Well, it's cool because it's to me it's a medium where you get to. I love documentaries. Obsessed with documentaries. I watch them all the fucking time,
bro. I was about to make a great host callback of just saying like, well, you started with a love of documentaries. Now video essays are sort of like an in between of
and that's what I love is you can make them funny. Is you can make a documentary humorous and lean into it being a little bit more entertaining than informative, maybe.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's always the split for me is like, how straight do I want to take this and just be informative? Or do I want to try to like inject humor into it, which is risky because some people will be like, I just want you to have the Wikipedia article set to cool music or whatever. Like,
yeah.
But I like to.
And some topics you're like, ooh, how do I do comedy around?
Yeah. That's the other thing.
More
is
and
like
more every fucking
things.
Day in America.
Yeah. Totally. And it's, you know, it's tough, but I think like, I try to watch things that excite me. And a big thing that I've let myself do only really recently is tap out on things that I don't like early and just admit to myself, I don't like this thing.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? Like, for the first time, there's like Marvel stuff where I'm like, I'm a huge Marvel guy. There's like first time where there's Marvel stuff, I'm like, I think I'm good on this for a little
bit. I think Thor Love and Thunder was like the last one I saw in the theater. Like, and I wasn't even, every other one I saw opening night or like the night, and now I just like, I have like such fatigue for all that. But I'm still going to movies on opening night.
But on that flip side, I tore through that Gen V stuff.
Like, and I was bored of The Boys this last season. I didn't like this last season.
Really? I thought season three was so good.
I thought it was really good too, but it got really repetitive. And
it starts to get to a point where it's like, okay, well, are you going to kill Homelander? Or are you not going to? Like, we got to do something here.
Also, I don't want to throw out spoilers for season three of Boys. So if you're listening and haven't watched it, skip ahead like a minute. But the fact that like they didn't kill Maeve annoyed me. And they didn't have to kill her, but the fucking, we need some stakes in this show. It's like, just keeps resetting all the way to default. It's like, well, Homelander's back completely in power and the Seven have to figure out what they're going to do about him again. Like, you're
totally
boring. Yeah. But it surprised me. That being said, that's what made me jump back when I was like, oh, I'll give Gen V a chance. And I fucking was like, this kind of rules. And I just fucking,
and it felt like it had really great stakes because like all these people, all these characters could die. Who gives a shit? Like,
right. You know, I don't even know who's supposed to be the leads.
Right. And right.
Spoiler for Gen V, when fucking the Gergen, I forget what the actor's name is, the voice of the guy from SpongeBob, when he fucking dies early on, you're like, oh shit. Okay. They're killing the fucking Dean. I thought he's going to be a main guy this whole time. And that gives you good stakes because you don't know the fucking show.
Yeah. No, I think that like, I think like just trying to like stay with stuff that excites me because, you know, there's, it's so
any
easy.
Any comedy that excites you now that you watch? Like,
Like I said, documentary now, definitely is, I've been, diving back into, Always Sunny just recently. I've been showing it to my wife. And who like never watched it. And it's like, it holds up, so much of it holds up so fucking good. It's just so tightly written and performed. Like,
what's crazy is like 8 years ago, I watched 12 seasons and I was like, or, you know, watched some insane amount, maybe 10 seasons. And I was like, okay, I'll take a little break and switch to another show, but I'll come back. And just the show still hasn't ended. You know, I'm like, oh shit. Okay. I guess I got to watch like 10 more seasons.
Like, yeah, it's Always Sunny is like comedy One Piece. You're like, is there 1,000 episodes of this? What is?
I'm so high, I'm trying to explain it. So I watched so much, I didn't even catch up to contemporary then. And I'm like, okay, I'll let this show run its course, then I'll finish it. And I was like, that was over, like, that was like a decade ago. And I'm like, fuck, they're still not done. These guys are, these people are fucking crushing it. Yeah, son, that's a good idea for, I just had an idea for a rewatch, but I don't think it was comedy. Oh, I wanted to rewatch The True Detectives. I just rewatched all Mindhunter, and that was really enjoyable. But I want to rewatch some comedies that I love. You know what I'll say that, like, here's one more question for you. What's your, like, most basic, like, anti-comedy nerd taste? Like, for me, I would say one of my things is I watched every single episode of Modern Family. Loved it. I like watched it every week. Like, not, I binged it for like 5 seasons and then I watched it like every Thursday forever.
Is it in the right vein to say Elf? Yeah. Is Elf basic?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I don't know. Elf is great.
I wouldn't
great,
call
though.
It basic, and I wouldn't even call Modern Family basic, but
yeah, me neither.
They're anti they're like both, comedy nerd. If you're trying to get,
they're not nerdy.
Right. If you were trying to get like nerd kudos from someone, you wouldn't be like, well, if you were trying to,
you
like,
ever seen this Elf?
Yeah, exactly. But that shit is a fucking banger,
dude. I mean, Step Brothers too, like Step Brothers.
Step Brothers is
those,
the best comedy,
like,
I've ever seen in my entire, that movie changed my life, and it came out when I was,
it is life changing. Yeah, it is a life changing movie for sure. All those movies are so fucking cool. Old School, like,
I loved all the Ferrell McKay collabs that meant so much to me. Seeing Anchorman in the movies when they have the big reporter fight, I laughed so hard I had to squeeze my dick and piss still was squirting out into my pants. And I was not,
Anchorman
was like 17 or 18 when that movie came out. I was not a kid. Yeah.
Like one of the first parties I ever like just like met a girl and made out with her like that night was I was wearing this Anchorman shirt, and she was like, "That shit fucking rules." Like, that was the first thing she said to me, and I was just like, and then I think I quoted Anchorman at her 8 times, and it somehow still worked.
The positive reinforcement on top is right? Is a good help to help you.
Well,
remember.
Dude, like Anchorman 2 was a movie that I remember me and my friends saw because we loved the first Anchorman so much, and I think that movie came out when I was probably in college. Anchorman 2, and I remember there was like, we saw it, I think a few weeks after it was already out. So there was like nobody in our showing, and they do the fight scene bit again, but they like just keep it going for a really, really long time. And then weirdly, the whole movie is like thrown away in the third act, and they're like, we have to make it to a recital. And I remember when they did that, I just started laughing so fucking hard.
Man, Step Brothers, that fucking broke my mind open when I saw that in the theater. That fucking killed me. I was like, this is what everything should be. This is just what comedy should be.
But it's like, I think maybe that's one of my most like guilty pleasure things is like Step Brothers, where it's like, or like, because I feel like there's a kind of guy that like loves Step Brothers, loves Rick and Morty.
Yeah, and you know,
my friend Richard lives with this dude, Dan. He's also a comic. And he's just like a big, like ex-ASU lineman. He loves like Rick and Morty and like all those, you know what I mean? Like, all those McKay fucking Ferrell stuff. Like, and he just
all the shit that like you wouldn't want to be quoting all the time, but that's why I kill at bachelor parties.
Exactly. Cause
I'll go to your bachelor party and I can make anyone laugh. I'm funny. But also your friend from home who likes comedy movies. Like, I got that. I'm that guy too. Don't worry. I just tell my own material on stage. So I have delivery skills. Now I'm going to add that to doing Eddie Murphy jokes. You got it.
Right. When you have to be alone with another adult man and you're like flipping through your Rolodex, you're like, okay, so let's try out a sports joke. All right. That didn't really work. How about a Steve Martin reference? Oh, we kind of like that. Okay. Maybe
that's
where,
when you find yourself profiling. You're like, this guy doesn't like sports. You're like, wait, why am I saying that? Am I racist? Kyle, thank you so much for talking to me, man. This is got to talk to the night owl. This is one of my later recordings, but that's what happens when you get to talk to a night owl,
dude. This is so fucking cool, and this is such a this is such a cool thing to do, because like I said, I just, you know, I love John Gabris and I love High and Mighty, and I've been,
thanks, man.
Long time, first time.
Yeah, that's so rad. You didn't even have, this is the longest call in ever. Like, okay, my Whack Packer, we gotta go. Well, we met when you asked me to do that Kids in the Yard show, which was one of my favorite comedy experiences I had. I was like, it was a little while ago. I was still kind of new to LA, still pretty new to stand up. And you were like, I'm a fan. You should come come headline this show. It's the vibes are right. Smoking weed. Everyone's hanging out. And I'm like, okay, yeah, thanks, man. No one wants me to be a headline. And I went there and I'm like, whoa, can you headline doing stand up? Can you do it? And I'm like, got me kicking in that direction. And then it was a fucking wonderful ass show. So I just wanted to repay the, like, say, compliment you back. That was such a fucking good time, man. Yeah. And I felt like an old man in a way that made me happy. I was like, I saw so many funny people. And now, like, Punky Johnson writes for SNL. Like, saw all these, like, super funny young people. And I'm like, oh, I feel like I got invited to something cool for the first time.
And it's also like, we had so many cool headliners. Like Punky would come through, Megan Stalter, you. So for people who don't know, I ran this show for a few years in LA, and it was a backyard comedy show called Kids in the Yard. And we would have my co-producer, Justin James. He's like a great comedian, but he's also like a Food Network chef. And so he would make these like insane dishes, and we would bring up each comedian by like chanting their name, like they were doing a keg stand. And like we encouraged everyone to like drink, and we would make jungle juice that was like insanely strong and like $3 a cup. And it would just be a rowdy night.
You were like, you sold me on it. It was like, it's party vibes. It was a yard party. It really was that. And people were there to see comedy too. It was awesome. Met Josh Scherer that night, former guest of the podcast too, from Mythic Kitchen. Just a wild fucking but let's get enough plugging shit that you're not doing anymore. Plug shit that you are doing now, because I could gas your head up too about your video essays. That Crystalia essay was some hard-hitting shit.
Thank you, man.
That was good.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen them, I have a YouTube channel, Kyle Anderson Comedy. I do these like insane deep dive video essay documentaries about weird topics. My Chris D'Elia one is well known in the comedy community, but more recently I did one where I went undercover working for the Chinese government making propaganda.
You're fucking nuts. I love it, dude. I love
which
it. When
was
you
really
when you
fun.
Get fucking black bagged, you'll be the first guest of High and Mighty that's been black bagged.
Yeah. But you'll have me on for another episode and I have to do it through like blinking Morse code.
Yeah.
Yes, this is not Kyle Anderson.
I'm like clearly an AI reproduction. That's so funny. Somehow I riff better though.
bring the AI guy back.
Yeah. But I did another one that was really fun that I really like called about this film series called Dao, which was like a Russian a series of Russian movies made by this Russian filmmaker that got this Russian oligarch to give him like a limitless budget. And he, for 7 years, filmed people that lived completely as like character, like method acting. And they method acted for 7 years and he filmed all of them because he started just wanting to make a film about this physicist. But he was like, well, to really make this film and really make it authentic, I have to make the people who live in the cafeteria where he works. I have to make the janitors. I have to make all these people. So then they all needed backstories. So then he was like, well, those should all be movies too.
So it's sort of
this interesting thing of like he said everything's real in it, where nothing is, there's no scripts, nothing staged, he's just simply directing the cameras where to capture everything, but everything is happening of the people's free will, right? Like they're all acting in this, but there's also scenes where like a woman gets sexually assaulted, so it's like, okay, well, is that, and then he's like, well, that was fake. And it's like, okay, well, okay. And then there's a scene where they like do like experiments, like torture experiments on babies. And they used like Ukrainian orphans who are like probably the people who you could do the most fucked up shit to on the planet without repercussion, unfortunately, is a Ukrainian orphan. And they're like, don't worry, we trained the Ukrainian orphans really, really good. And it's like, did you? So it's this very opaque, like weird, like performance art thing that grew to this like avant-garde media production. And it happened for 7 years and the films have just started coming out since like 2021.
And
like I said, it's like an MCU about this like theoretical Russian physicist.
That's interesting. I'll check that. I'll check out not the entire series. I'll check out your video.
but those are really cool. I do a podcast with my buddies Richard Humphrey, who I think you know.
Oh yeah, I know Humphrey.
Yeah. And my buddy Spike Kittrell. And we do a podcast called Development Hell, where we deep dive into the development hell behind different movies or albums or, you know, TV shows,
or behind the scenes horror stories of it,
behind the scenes horror stories of all kinds of different stuff. So
that's rad. It's fun.
You know, if you like movie stuff, which you probably do, if you're, you know, an Action Boys listener or whatever, check out Development Hell. We're one of 7 podcasts with that fucking name. So good luck finding us.
Listen to all of them. Truly. Just get out there.
Yeah. Really, really poke around. There's one that,
if you like one of them more than ours, you're allowed to just keep listening.
When we started, we were the first one. And then within a month, like 3 others had started with the same name. And one of them is about like web developing. I'm like, okay, whatever.
that's whack. I mean, that's a witty name, but come on.
Yeah.
Kyle Anderson Comedy on YouTube. Check that shit out. Check out the podcast, Development Hell. Check out actionboys.biz or 101 Places to Party Before You Die. Thank you so much for coming on, Kai. That's a nickname I'm accidentally keep saying as the
Kai weed Kai and John John.
Johnny and Kai. Bye-bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's actually, it's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now, somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on!
Do it now!